It is Friday, December 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, California firefighters battle fierce wildfires in several locations. President Donald Trump presses for a victory on taxes as the Russia probe continues, and singer Bebe Rexha debuts her new single in the number one spot on the country charts. It's all ahead. U.S. firefighters in Southern California are battling a new fire north of San Diego that is quickly spreading. Overnight into early Friday, firefighters tried to contain the fire that covers more than 4,000 hectares. Meanwhile, fire officials said Thursday evening a wildfire north of Los Angeles destroyed 439 homes and buildings. I spoke with VOA Los Angeles correspondent Elizabeth Lee about the status of one of the Los Angeles fires.
The one that has been most watched by people in Los Angeles and outside of Los Angeles is the Skirball Fire. It's the one closest to the city of Los Angeles. And there is good news. It is also close to the University of California, Los Angeles. And the classes had been canceled yesterday, but are resuming today. Classes are resuming today at UCLA. 475 acres are involved in this fire called the Skirball Fire. And it's 30% contained, which is good news. That number has been slowly creeping up over the last couple of days. One firefighter has reported minor burn injuries. As far as the structure's damage, and this is an area near the affluent neighborhood of Bel Air where some celebrities live, 12 structures have been damaged, 6 structures destroyed, and more than 700 homes in a 3.2 square mile area are asked to evacuate. And that is the situation right now in that area. And, of course, that's closely watched because one of the busiest highways, 405, runs right through this burn area. But the freeway is open. It goes north and south. And so if that freeway closes, it would cut off the city, the northern from the southern. So at this point, the freeway is open and things are looking up at that Skirball Fire.
Well, and now what about the area? I believe that's also near that the well-known museum, the Getty Center.
Yes, the Getty Center. Initially, 2 days ago, they were concerned about smoke, but the Getty Center has been running its, you know, has a good ventilation system. And so far as we know, the center is untouched.
Well, unfortunately, fires have also spread to the San Diego area. What is the status of that fire?
Yes, it's called the Lilac Fire for the local residents here. And it grew to 4,100 acres going towards the northern part of San Diego County, towards the small seaside town called Oceanside. And also there is a Marine Corps base there called Camp Pendleton. And people are watching. There are some areas that are being evacuated. But so far, the Marine Corps base is not being affected at this moment. It has been reported that 3 people have suffered burn injuries and 2 firefighters are hurt. And they're working to try to contain that fire as well.
I understand that California Governor Jerry Brown has declared states of emergency in regards to these areas.
Yes, he had declared emergency proclamations to 3 counties affected by these 6 wildfires. That's San Diego County, Los Angeles County, and Ventura County. He has also asked President Donald Trump for help to declare a state of emergency for Southern California. And that way to help with aid in the state and local efforts. And for now, the military and Navy helicopters are set to join to help fight the San Diego fire because it's close to, again, Camp Pendleton. And also the state's National Guard's 146th Air Wing out of Oxnard, which is north of Los Angeles, that's in the Ventura County areas, will be helping firefighters fight this blaze. So we are getting a lot of help from outside the area because more than 5,000 firefighters have been working day and night for the last several days to try to contain the various fires in the area.
VOA's Elizabeth Lee reporting from Los Angeles. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So Andrew, what's trending?
Well, Sarah, we're back to a story that we've been talking about for more than a year. Russia's influence on the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Now, much of that has been focused on how Russia used U.S.-based social networks like Facebook and Twitter to influence American voters. But it turns out now that social networks based in Russia played a role as well. Because according to the Washington Post, VK, which essentially is Russia's version of Facebook, contacted the Trump campaign in November 2016, just before the election. A man named Konstantin Sidorkov, who is VK's director of partnership marketing, emailed Donald Trump Jr. and the campaign's digital director, Dan Scavino, and offered to promote Trump's candidacy on the social network. Now, Sidorkov says that VK reaches out to many celebrities and high-profile people to promote them on the site, that this was just part of their regular routine. Whether that explanation is accepted or not remains to be seen. I expect, however, that this will be something that Robert Mueller will be looking into, if he isn't already, but we're just getting word about this today. Also trending today, city of Houston, Texas, one of the big stories in 2017 after it was devastated by floods from Hurricane Harvey. But today, Houston is trending again for the weather, but this time it's something much happier. Hashtag Houston snow. You don't usually see a lot of snow in Houston. It's a very warm climate, but they're getting a rare snowstorm today. It's blanketing much of the southern United States, and a lot of people posting pictures and videos saying that they haven't seen snow, some of them in their lifetimes, in some of these places. So kind of cool stuff.
Okay, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Palestinian protests erupt over President Donald Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson urges Saudi Arabia to curb its military involvement in Yemen. Chinese advocacy groups are calling on rights abusers to be commented under the Global Magnitsky Act, and Pakistan says a convicted Indian spy's family will be allowed to meet him on Christmas Day. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study outlines the discovery of the most distant supermassive black hole to date. The monster black hole has been calculated to be roughly 13 billion light years from Earth. This means that it was formed a mere 690 million years after the Big Bang. An international group of scientists calculated the mass of the black hole to be 800 million times that of our sun. Study co-author Daniel Stern of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory says the discovery of the distant supermassive black hole challenges current theories about how black holes form. The scientists found that the giant black hole is gobbling matter up so quickly that it has become a quasar, which are among the brightest known celestial objects in the universe. Supermassive black holes are found in the center of large galaxies like our own Milky Way. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we meet a young Afghan girl who spent her entire life in prison. President Donald Trump is pushing congressional Republicans to enact a package of tax cuts in the coming weeks as his first major legislative achievement after a previous failure on health care. But Trump and his administration also remain distracted by the probe into Russian meddling in last year's U.S. election. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the political turmoil that continues to swirl around the Trump White House.
Donald Trump is close to delivering on a key campaign promise, tax cuts that he says will boost the economy and create jobs.
I will tell you this in a non-braggadocious way. There has never been a 10-month president that has accomplished what we have accomplished. That I can tell you. That I can tell you.
After a setback on health care and little progress on building a border wall with Mexico, Trump is eager for a win to boost his historically low approval rating.
Lock him up! Lock him up!
But the recent guilty plea by former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn in the Russia probe is a reminder the investigation remains a major distraction.
What has been shown is no collusion. No collusion.
Most polls show Trump's approval rating hovering below 40%. But his support among Republicans remains high, says analyst Robert Jones.
Among members of his own party, his standing is, for the most part, quite good. He enjoys about 8 in 10 support, with significant numbers of Republicans saying, in fact, there's virtually nothing he could do to lose their support.
Trump's supporters are fueled by a sense of fear of economic and societal factors that are out of their control, says Henry Olson.
These people were afraid of losing their economic and cultural place in American life, and they wanted it back. So Donald Trump rockets to the top of the American of the Republican primary, largely on the backs of this sort of fear.
Democrats won recent elections in Virginia and New Jersey, largely on the basis of strong turnout from anti-Trump voters. But even liberal analysts like Joy Reid believe that Trump's base remains loyal to him.
And so I think for Democrats who are really kind of obsessed with this idea of converting Trump voters over, I'm not sure that can be done, because I think that for a lot of people, Trump is their Obama, you know, and he has a cultural power over at least a third of the country that I don't think anything can break.
But Trump's overall weak approval ratings could be a drag for Republicans in next year's congressional midterm elections, says John Fortier.
If the president is in the same place as he is today at 38 or 39% job approval ratings, that midterm election is probably not going to go well for Republicans. They're going to lose seats in the House of Representatives, maybe endangering their majority.
Congressional Republicans believe the best way to protect themselves in next year's election is to enact the president's agenda. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
11 years ago, a little girl named Mina was born in an Afghan prison, and to this day, she's never seen the outside world. The child, who lives with her mother in the Nangarhar prison in the city of Jalalabad, Afghanistan, is curious to see what life is like outside the prison's four walls. VOA reporter Zabihula Ghazi talked to the girl and her mother at the Nangarhar prison.
My father had killed people, leading to the imprisonment of my father, mother, brother, and uncle. My father and brother died in prison. My mother has remained alive in prison. I was born and grew up here.
Mina was still in her mother's womb when a court sentenced her father, brother, uncle, and mother to death for their involvement in the murder of 27 people. The father and brother were sent to the gallows, but Mina's mother, Shiringwala, was spared from being hanged because of her unborn child. Now, 11 years later, Mina is curious about what lies on the other side.
My big dream is to go out with my mother and see my brothers and sisters.
Mina is in primary school at an educational center in the prison. She plays with the children of other female prisoners. She says that she has spent her whole life listening to stories of horror and sorrow. During her interview with VOA, she repeatedly talked about wanting freedom for herself and her mother, saying she has her own aspirations.
I want to go home with my mother and study to become a doctor.
Why can't Mina leave the prison? Her mother would not let her.
President Ashraf Ghani should hang me before separating my daughter from me, because my life depends on her. I cannot live without her even for a moment. I will hang myself.
Shiringwala says her daughter would face danger outside. She says she has two sons who are living, but she has not heard from them, nor have they inquired about her or their younger sister. So for now, Mina stays in prison, a victim of crimes she didn't commit, with an uncertain future ahead. Shaista Sadatlami, VOA News, Jalalabad, Afghanistan.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Pop artist Bebe Rexha just made history as the first female artist to debut in the number one spot on the Billboard Hot Country Songs chart with the song Meant to Be, featuring Florida Georgia Line. This accomplishment has sparked much controversy, leaving many fans of country music disillusioned and disappointed. Nikki Strong of VOA One is here to explain. So, Nikki, break this down for us. Why is this accomplishment so controversial?
Okay, on many levels. Bebe Rexha. I mean, when I first saw her on the top of the chart, I was like, huh? She has no well-known connection to the country music community. It's not like she's Kelly Clarkson or even like a Taylor Swift. Her connection is Florida Georgia Line, which are the guys, you know, initially who sing on the track, right? So that's first and foremost. It's like, who is she to those in the country community? And then Florida Georgia Line, a lot of people have a love-hate relationship with these guys anyway, because, you know, some argue that they really are like wannabe pop artists. In large part because their music can, you know, has crossed over. And in the whole what is real country music debate, they're like the poster child for not being real country music, the epitome of bro country. You know, and others say they just simply expand the boundaries of the genre. You know, like they reflect what's happening now. You know, either way, I don't hate Florida Georgia Line. It's clear that to me that they are a country pop group. Their leanings are pop, and they have had their fair share of number one hits on the chart, and they're very accomplished. And so whether people like them or not, they are considered country artists, and they have a huge fan base. And a lot of their music, yes, is very catchy. But Bebe is interesting because she is the first woman to debut in the number one spot on the Billboard Hot Country Songs chart. And this is a slap in the face, really, to women like Reba and Dolly and Miranda Lambert and Kacey Musgraves that have been holding down the fort. And still, no matter how good they are, you know, they have still have not really gotten their fair share of recognition for their work on air or on the charts. And that informs awards and all that other stuff. Carrie Underwood hasn't even debuted in the number one spot on this chart.
Wow.
Yes. And another thing is that the Billboard Hot Country Songs chart, these Billboard charts in general yield a lot of influence. So they help determine playlists across the country. I mean, I'm always looking at the Billboard charts. And so it can really help make an artist be a huge commercial success. So for a pop artist to debut in the number one spot impacts how much more difficult, you know, it is for an artist who loves and works in the genre to get, well, easy to get sideswiped by an artist who doesn't work in the genre.
So how did this happen?
Okay, how did it happen? All right, so there is an article that I recommend that really, it really breaks down it in more detail. It's on a website called SavingCountryMusic.com. I posted it on my Facebook page, IamNikkiStrong. I am Nikki Strong. So you can take a look at it there. But for the sake of time, here are a couple of the key elements that contributed to this happening. Part of it is Billboard changed how it determines its spots on the charts. So they use what is now called a hybrid data list, which blends airplay, streaming, and sales. So on the airplay side, of course, there was a push to both country and pop radio formats for this song. But this chart now allows for spins on pop radio to count on the country charts.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. And Bebe is a pop artist, you know, and she gets love on pop radio stations. It counts on country. So, and another key is sales. Now, most downloads are priced at like $1.29, you know, on iTunes and Amazon. This one was priced at 69 cents.
Oh.
So, which of course drives up sales. This is not a new trick. This is very common. I remember when an R&B artist, Ashanti, when she debuted her CD and it was priced at $9.99 when the average CD cost at that time was like $16.99.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. It's something, you know, that is part of, it's a promotional price. That's what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And so now this is interesting because one paid download, so that already encourages downloads. And one paid download is considered 150 streams of a song.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, if you do the math, whoo, yeah, it really, it increases your number of streams. Now, streaming itself, so this is a whole other element. So you have the sales, you have airplay, you have streaming. Streaming itself is counted from a variety of sources. So Spotify, YouTube, and other platforms. And paying some of these platforms to promote your music is not uncommon either. You know, it's even possible to buy a spot on particular digital playlist. And so, which all of these playlists also help to convince radio programmers to play a particular song, which then increases their airplay, increases their downloads, increases the overall exposure of the song, which helps drives it to the top of the chart. So that's how, in a nutshell, how that happened.
Well, how is the song itself?
I think the song is very catchy. It's hooky. It's very radio friendly. It's a feel good pop song. We'll see over the course of time how this will play out on country radio stations across the country.
Oh, should be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can share your thoughts with Nikki on this topic on Facebook and Twitter at VOA1 The Hits. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
Thank you.
If it's meant to be, it'll be, it'll be. Baby, just let it be. If it's meant to be, it'll be, it'll be. Baby, just let it be. So won't you ride with me, ride with me. See where this thing goes.
And that is our show. Please visit our website. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The recent legislative and municipal elections in the Republic of Equatorial Guinea were a chance for the government there to live up to the goal of widening the country's democratic space, a goal that was the focus of Equatorial Guinea's celebrated National Dialogue of 2014. As longtime President Obiang Nguema Mbasogo said at the time, democracy and national unity must be priorities in the problems that affect the nation. Where there are no public liberties, there cannot be institutional development. Unfortunately, as U.S. Ambassador to Equatorial Guinea, Julie Furuta Toy, wrote in a recent op-ed, the opportunity for the government to expand the country's democratic space, demonstrate that it hears the voice and the will of the people, and improve its image on the international stage was missed in November. The elections were a step back, she wrote. The balloting of candidates did not allow the public to vote freely for candidates to represent them at any level, since the voters only had the choice to vote for a party. The members of the public were registered to vote in a process that was not transparent and was not observed by the international or domestic observers. And the final count of the votes was not at all transparent or free. Additionally, restrictions on internet and communication systems were enforced. Reportedly, the Democratic Party of Equatorial Guinea, the party of President Nguema, won the legislative and municipal elections with 92% of the vote. At the Chamber of Deputies in Malabo, only a single member of the opposition from the Citizens' Party for Innovation was elected, leaving 99 seats to the party in power. Ambassador Furuta Toy emphasized that a vibrant and loyal opposition is necessary to create economic opportunities for everyone. Without hearing the voices, without an independent representative democracy, the government limits the ability of its citizens to make informed choices for the future of the nation. As she wrote earlier this year, the greatest resource of Equatorial Guinea is not its abundant supply of oil and gas. The greatest resource of Equatorial Guinea is actually her people, said Ambassador Furuta Toye. It is past time for the leaders of Equatorial Guinea to ensure that Equatorial Guineans are allowed the democratic space required for their country to flourish.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.